interview with Sir Razik Farid, March 1968.
Who were instrumental mistook even the Nuers, with whom the Sinhalese were very friendly, when actually the Sinhalese intended to send away the Indian Muslims who were instrumental in starting the riots, really.
The Coast Moors, as they were called.
They were known as Indian Moors.
But would it be correct to say that in the heat of the Sinhalese attack,
yes,
they did not distinguish between the two?
They could not distinguish. Yes. Well, distinguish meaning, as Muslims, they all went in for not only the Indian Moors, but also the indigenous Moors of Ceylon. And the people who started the riot, the Indians, Indian Moors, they took train that very night to India, while we had to bear the brunt of it. We, the Moors, had to bear the brunt of it.
What do you mean by started the riot?
Actually, in my way of thinking, it was really the Indian Moors who had no right to put up a takia, a place of worship, in the very street which the Moors and Sinhalese had agreed upon not to take the Perahara in the place where there are mosques or religious, Muslim religious places. The Indian Moors had put up a mosque on one of the streets, and when the Perahara was passing, they started throwing bottles at the Perahara. Who? They meaning the Indian Moors, in which we, the Ceylon Moors, had no had not taken part at all.
After the riots had got going, were there cases of Moors, Indian or Ceylon Moors, taking counter action against the Sinhalese mobs and attacking Sinhalese themselves?
Well, you see, the Sinhalese were such a large number in each of the villages that they could not possibly... Hello. Yes. Such a large number. And the Moors were just in small pockets, where there were, say, even 250 families of Ceylon Moors. The Sinhalese, round about, had 1,000 families.
I was thinking of Beluwada, and also somewhere in Maladana there were streets which were mostly
we did not return back until the Sinhalese from those Vanavaliyas, who were known as Vanavaliyas, came from Kelaniya side in large numbers. And and then they started, they came right rushing through, attacking all the homes, and they came up to Messenger Street, almost up to Messenger Street, Armour Street. Then, fortunately, my father had, with the cooperation of the government, E.B. Denham, had started the Moors section, Colombo Town Guard. There were all sections, Malay section, Burger section, and my father had started the Moors section of the Colombo Town Guard. So we were in our uniform and we were there. So when these people were coming, then of course the Moors also got ready in the Moorish quarter, Moor Street, New Moor Street, Old Moor Street, Messenger Street. They also returned there, returned the attack. And actually drove the Vanavaliyas, huge, big fellow, drove the Vanavaliyas back.
Was this the fight at San Sebastian Hill? There was a meeting of the two forces at San Sebastian Hill?
Down below San Sebastian. Down below. Armour Street was the place where we gave the attack.
And you were in that group as a...
Second lieutenant of the Colombo Town Guard. I was there. Mm-hmm. And at that time, a very funny thing happened. Old Ramanathan, Sir Ponnambalam Ramanathan, came in his No. Horse and trap. That time there was no car. A horse and trap, and came up to right at the junction of Quarry Road with Messenger Street and Olmo Street, or Newmo Street. And then said, Marikars, you must all get in, otherwise the Vanawale, as you are now rushing in large force, they will murder you. And I almost, right before my eyes, how a person by the name of rather a rich man, he was a third cross street dealer in iron goods. So he was at the junction there in his house, getting ready to go to his shop. When he came out, he saw this man saying this. He raised his sarong to about halfway and said, silk sarong he had worn. And he said, now the Sinhalese are murdering us. Now you as a Tamil, he called you a Tamil. The Tamil, now you want us to go under the Sinhalese, and therefore you have come here. He said, get out of this, you Karai, this place. And drove the old man away in his car.
So did the town guard get involved in this fight?
No.
As for these Sinhalese groups, did you feel that there was some central election?
Well, at that time it was said that it was really D.D. Pedris's son who gave a great deal of helping hand to the Sinhalese who were attacked.
Said by whom?
Well, the people, the rumor was that it was so, because I myself saw when I went with Mr. Altendorf, superintendent of police, I believe, to insert my sister in my father's motor car. We saw, I personally saw, big long sticks, you see, very carved sticks, like the Mamati handles, being used by the Sinhalese people in the village. They were carrying this and coming to fight, you see. And when they came up, Altendorf shouted, you see, in very good Sinhalese, there's a big battalion coming, therefore you better get away, leave all your sticks alone. And so they put all their battens, long battens of poles, and they ran away.
But that doesn't necessarily prove organization. They may have picked these things up, they had mammoth handles they could remove.
But these are not really mammoth handles, like mammoth handles, much, much longer. Poles, see? And well carved, I mean it's a real English, German pole, see? Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about the Pedris case where he's supposed to have shot at the moons? Is that correct?
No, I didn't catch that.
He was court-martialed for having used his pistol against the Moorish mob on his own, I think, supposed to have incited the mob.
Yes. He was really, but I feel that he really had a hand in the riots. Young man as he was, I'm very sorry, he is also an only son of Pedris, as I am a son, only son of my father. So as a matter of fact, old Pedris and his wife came and fell at my father's feet and said, as you have a son, only son, I have my only son. And you name any amount or any properties that you want us to gift it to some charitable institution, we are prepared to do, but save our only son. My father had already gone and seen the devastation that had been done in the villages.
Yes.
And yes. Therefore he could not, he said, I couldn't. I'm representing a community. If it is a case of an individual, like myself and yourself, I would have forgiven. But it's the community that can never forgive you. It will give your son for this dastardly act.
Apart from Pedris, do you know of any others who were involved in that?
No, my father, well, when the Britishers were searching for these people, I remember my father saying, and even D.S.N. and I were saying, our good friend, that my father tried his level best to save the Senanaikas. And D.S.N. and I, especially the late Mr. D.S.N. and I, was taken by my father to different places and hid it with his brothers or some others also. So I remember the words of D.S. He said, well, we went and stayed in the place where the man was a Unani physician, and he was known as Adina Vidina Kotana Kapana Mohandram Lage Abdul Rahman.
But why were those people arrested, you know, D.B., D.S. and others?
Evidently because the government that time thought that they were also, they were the leaders of the Sinhalese community, they were not the least doubt. So they thought that they also had a hand in it.
There is a theory that some of the Karawa Buddhist groups were behind the riots. How far is that?
Pedu is the Karawa.
Yes, but one example isn't proved.
Well, that was the only one they could have really proved.
They were very suspicious of the DSS, of Panadur.
Yes, yes they were. And I think CEADS or... No, another DSS. CEA was Columbus. He was in prison.
Yes, but I was wondering with what justification, you know, whether you had any knowledge.
No.
What about the local ringleaders and the mob leaders? From what class did they come?
I couldn't possibly say, because at that time we never, as an old royalist, I had my friends among Sinhalese, Tamils, but I never knew to what community they belonged or to what class they belonged. We were just friends. That was the thing that existed at that time, and I do wish that we will someday come onto that position and just be Sinhalese.
Can you remember the Edmund Hebervithana case? He's supposed to have led the attack on Crystal Palace.
Yes, that was evidently because of the business.
But did he really do so?
I couldn't say.
You see, there is a problem because caused by the fact that in some outlying areas, the Moorish residents, at least some of them,
yes,
obviously not all, are said to have taken the opportunity to hit at old enemies and brought evidence against them.
I'm not sure. Because they had most of their shops and homes devastated. And the Sinhalese people very generously collected money and paid the Moor families that had lost their homes and business.
Going on to another sphere, Sir Rasik, I noticed that you are president of the All Ceylon Moors Association. As president, did you have occasion to meet the governor, Manny, and make representations on the reforms that were being considered at that time?
Yes. The Moors Association as a whole, I was there. I was the spokesman. But yes, we went before Governor Bain, and we did have our say, what we felt about the whole thing, and what sort of reform you would have preferred, and so on and so forth.
Did you feel that he was sympathetic and...
Hello.
Did you find Governor Manning sympathetic to your viewpoints and
I'm sorry, I can't remember.
Because there was the issue then whether they should have only territorial representation or communal representation as well. And what was your viewpoint on that?
Well, we always wanted a communal representation because we were the second minority. And after the riots, we had lost. As a matter of fact, according to my father's calculation, we lost about 50,000 Moors, indigenous population. Because he went right round the island and assessed. So that 50,000 would have brought at least another 50,000 children.
Were you a member of the Ceylon National Congress?
I was a member.
No.
I was rather young, and I suppose my father was a member.
Now, I was wondering whether you had any idea what led to the split between the Tamil leaders and the Sinhalese leaders in 1920-21.
I
couldn't. No idea. Well, going on then to later years, as I said, I'm interested in the Donmore Constitution Act and the Executive Commission system.
Yes.
What comments have you to make on the Constitution as a whole?
Even today I feel that that Constitution is much better than this party system. We are not right for a party system. Party system existed in Britain. And it came to a position, a real good position, after 100 years. We are hardly 20 years. And at the present juncture, if we can come back to the to that system that was given by Donmore, a committee system, I think Mother Lanka will not suffer as she is suffering now.
By what were the advantages of the committee system?
The progress of the country was our first aim in the committee system. Today I don't think that exists. It's the progress of the party.
But weren't these committees pulling in different directions? Was there any central direction?
I don't think so.
The committee?
Yes, the committee system didn't pull in. I mean, the minister sort of got the views of all the, at that time it was about 8 members in each committee. And I think he adhered to the greater number, and the majority had the say.
Yes, but then each committee seems to have worked in on a compartmentalized basis. They don't seem to have coordinated their activities.
Mm. Well, that was evidently at the cabinet stage. But where our own committees are concerned, I know of number, I was in the local administration from 36 to 41 or 42, and from 42 onwards, I was there in the Ministry of Education. And all the shortcomings that were there where the Moor community were concerned, I had no fight. But I placed facts before the committee, and it was all unanimous.
Now, I was wondering whether on some issues, within the committees, there was some sort of log rolling and back scratching. I'll support you on this point, if you help me here.
Well, I suppose that exists even today in different forms in the cabinet.
Do you feel that the committees expended too much time on trivial details, and particularly on appointments and transfers?
Mm. Well, at that time we were new, you know, and must have been certainly, we might have fought on those bases. But, justice had to prevail. See, where there was no justice earlier, especially where we Moors are concerned, even up to 1956, we had only one inspector of schools, and I had handed over 288 government Muslim schools to the government. Private school that I started to the government. So the 288 schools should have had at least about 28 inspectors. See? And we had only one up to 1956.
But wasn't the committee system slow? Was it, didn't it prevent quick action?
Might have been at that time, because it didn't last long enough to mend our ways.
On the other hand, was it possible for a minister where sort of emergency or something needing quick action arose, for him to take the decision on his own and come to the committee afterwards and get their approval?
That I think is not correct. He must not be given that sort of Hitleric power, shall I say, a new word.
It never happened in your committee?
No, not to my knowledge.
How did you find Mr. Bandaranaike as the chairman?
Very good. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. I thought he was prone to be late in attending meetings.
Ah, yes. But then we carried on. We were very democratic. We put Mr. R.S.S. Gunawardhan in the chair and carried on until he came. until it arrived.
What about...
Even no respect to a person.
What about Mr. Kananda?
He was excellent too. He was one of the best ministers I across. He was always punctual. Never late.
Hardworking?
Very hardworking. And honest and sincere. That was a great appointment.
For Mr. Bandaranaike, isn't it true that when he was not methodical, but when he got down to work, he could finish things quickly?
Yes. He was very quick. And quick-witted too. He could grasp things much quicker than most of our members did.
When you were elected to the Committee of Local Administration, was there a contest for the chairman's post?
Not in the local administration. But before that, there were a number of them were trying to get into position and become minister. At that time, there was a big squabble.
In fact, how did you get into the local administration? Did you ask them to?
No, I was just thrown into it.
This must have been part of the Parasinghali's...
Yes, that's right. Yes. As a matter of fact, I think you must have read something about it. Yes, it was a disgraceful act on the part of a very good friend of mine, and I wanted to get into a certain committee and mentioned to him. He sort of worked it up in such a way by permutation and combination and threw me into another committee.
They must not have been sure of your vote, so they must have put you in.
Yes, that is so. Because I openly said, I have always been honest and sincere in my service, and also I spoke straight. I feared nobody. So I said, well, if you are fit to the post, if I think that you are fitted to the post, I will vote for you. But I think there are better men.
There is a story going around, I don't know how far it's true, that they needed the vote of an European member in one committee. So they went to the Europeans and promised to make another fellow in some other committee a minister or something or other. And got this fellow vote, but didn't do that. I don't know how far.
And threw the other man overboard.
Yes.
Yes. Might have happened, but I'm not aware of it.
Did you find any members of the Education Committee? Oh, how was it that you managed to transfer yourself? Did you ask for
that? It was my request. And they very kindly granted it. As Kanagra was there.
Did you exchange with anybody? Or?
No. There was a vacancy when somebody died. And I applied for that position and then I got it.
Much
against the wish of Mr. Bandaranaike.
Did you find anybody giving Mr. Kanagara trouble, tending to quarrel with him, particularly?
Well, we have had small squabbles rather than quarrels, and I think we eventually settled it in the best interest.
Did the officers of state attend any important meetings and present their point of view?
No, not unless they were asked by the committee.
Did that happen?
Oh, yes.
And now we come to a very important point. Free education. How did that proposal originate?
It originated very suddenly. It was a sort of a brainwave of Mr. Kanagara and a few of us, you see, including Ratnayake. So, suddenly, one day it was placed before us and we simply grasped at it, jumped at it.
This was a special committee, wasn't it? Not the committee on education, it was a special...
No, it was in the education, I'm not too sure. I can't remember. But it was really the education committee that had a big hand in it.
Was it?
The Pearl of Great Price.
But wasn't the intention when it started something to do with the idea of giving all those who got education, what they call basic education in those days?
That must have been, I think we came to it later. We realized that we had gone a little too far, what the country couldn't afford. Then we thought that we should have really gone up to a certain level, and then higher education, we should have picked and chosen the smart youngsters.
When you considered the original proposal, did you take it into account, the fact that it would be expensive?
Well, at that time, when we wanted to give something to the people, money was no consideration. We had ample money.
I have been told that ultimately, though, is this correct? Did the USA and America have doubts about the wisdom of this proposal?
I'm not aware.
I saw that ultimately the OEG said, we have the money, so we can go ahead. I notice here that you supported and voted with four other state councils for the acceptance of Sinhala only.
Yes.
In 1944.
That's right.
Who proposed it and what led to this sudden proposal?
Well, the motion, there was a motion by my good friend Mr. J.R. Jayawardena, mm-hmm. that Sinhala should be the state language. But when G.G. Ponnambalam started arguing it and wanting the 50-50, he sort of agreed. But we, the five of us, I was the only minority member, we said no, Sinhala should be the state language. Because in my opinion, I thought that to bring unity amongst the different communities, the five communities that made the Silanese nation, that we'll be able to bring ourselves together by means of this common bondage of language. And I stood by it, even when many of the Lim Sinhalese friends of ours tried to convince us that that was not the proper time.
Did you use the phrase Sinhala only?
Sinhala.
You used the phrase. And can you tell me something about the founding of the UNP? Who were the founding fathers and what led you personally to join the UNP?
Well, we had no party system at that time. This is the first thing, and it was said that this was going to be a democratic party where all minorities could join and have their views aired, and we will be able to get all the facilities to the minorities. Then I thought, well, this was the best place I could join. And I was one of the founder members.
Mm-hmm. Who were the other key members, Mr. D.S.N.?
D.S.N. and I, okay. Then Dr. Kannangara, Bandar Nayak, S.W.R., J.R. Jayawardena, and many of these...
Francis Mullamore?
Francis Mullamore, mm-hmm. Yes.
Wasn't it a bit anomalous having the Sinhala Mahasabha continuing at the same time as an independent group within the UNP?
Yes. But I was under the impression that Sinhala Mahasabha came in later, not when the UNP was formed.
You didn't get involved in the Yamuna talks in 1947.
No. Thank heaven.
In practice, did you find the UNP a democratic party?
Later in years, I found that it was not democratic enough for me. Mm-hmm.
You did not leave the UNP in 1951 when the Bandar Nayak crossed the field?
No.
However, I noticed that in 1952, at the general election, you stood as an independent candidate.
Yes.
Is there any...
I left the UNP, and because I found that there were some errors and omissions where democracy was concerned, so I resigned from the UNP.
This was before the general elections came up, or was it just before?
No, before. Because I believe what really happened was a municipal election, mm-hmm. where I took up the position of a Moore candidate, and the UNP supported another. And we didn't see eye to eye, you see. And,
what was your position then in 1956?
Yes.
In 1956? Did you come forward as an independent or as UNP?
UNP. Lionel Kotalawal held a big meeting in the Merv Islamic Culture at Home, and called up a meeting, and the members all agreed, and we had a meeting. There it was forced on me that I should join in the UNP and contest as a UNP candidate. And I did contest, and I won the election. And I believe I was representing not only Colombo Central, but eventually had to represent the whole of the Western province, because I was the only UNP candidate to turn.
And then, on June 13, 1956, you must have voted against your own party in supporting the Sinhala-only bill.
Yes, I did.
What led you to take this action?
Well, I'm usually one of those who stood by my word. And when I thought, as I said earlier, that we could have brought all the five communities together by this language issue, well, I thought I'd stand by my gun.
But wasn't there an important difference between 1944 and 56 in the sense that those who presented the Sinhala only in 56, at least for sake of argument,
yes,
were forces who were in some ways anyway hostile to the minorities and certainly hostile to the Tamils. And in this sense, Sinhala only was a divisive force rather than a unifying force.
No, I didn't think it like that. Because in my way of thinking, although there was this 50-50 argument by Gigi Panambalam, I thought it was the best thing was at that juncture it would have been all right, you see, for the moment. But later, it would really be in the best interest if I stood by the Sinhala only and brought the all communities together.
And after you left the UNP, you left UNP in 58, there's a 2-year gap. What
yes.
led you to remain within the UNP for 2 years and then leave in 58?
There was some squabble over some communal difference. And I always stood by my community, which was a neglected community at that time.
Was the fact that Badiuddin Mohammed was an important member of the UNP, did that influence your thinking?
In that case, I would have gone dead against him.
What did you think of the SLSP performance with reference to language question and communal matters?
Well, whatever I request of them, they granted. And because I never presented anything that was detrimental to the community.
No,
but always for the progress of the community.
I was wondering whether the way in which the MEP presented matters and the way in which the action tended to accentuate communal differences and...
No, I didn't think so, because to be frank and very frank, the Tamils had the overriding power at that time. There was a time when we had, as I said, we had only one inspector for the 288 schools that I handed over to the government, and had only one inspector. In the same way, we had hardly five trained teachers. There we have about nearly 5,000 today, thanks to the little foresight I had in starting the training colleges for the Moors in Natalachena and Alukkam.
What was your attitude on the question of the trade union squabbles at that time within the government? Didn't you feel that some of the unions under Mr. Philip Gunawardena, some elected unions were hindering
the progress?
Yes.
Yes, I did think so. And also, like the party system, the trade union also became party. It was not for the trade union of tradespeople. But it became a party. In all walks of life, they were like the party system of today in government. That also became divided into parties. MEP and SLSP, UNP and Tamil Congress.
So do you feel that the trade union movement has not been a genuine
unfortunately, did not serve the purpose for which it stood. It should have stood.
In other words, they were instruments of parties.
Yes. Back again into that wrong system.
What led you to support Dr. Dahanayake?
Well, as a matter of fact, next to C.W.W. Kannangare, it was Dahanayake who gave generously to the Moor community where education is concerned. He saw through it that we were languishing while the other minority communities were progressing. And when I presented the case and explained to him, he readily gave us the starting of these different schools in different villages.
And then again, what led you to join the SLST in July 1960?
Well, there was a request by my people. I always I was guided by my people, my community. They held a meeting, and they said they wanted to have a meeting later somewhere else, and then they all came, leading people came here, and they forced me to join.
What do you mean by saying your people? Do you mean the Muslims of Colombo Saints?
No, Colombo and different other areas, villages, towns.
You see, a little earlier you implied that you were opposed to Badawi in Mohammed.
Yes.
So didn't you have doubts about joining a party in which he was a key member?
Well, I always, even after joining, I had the upper hand of him. Because Mrs. Bandaranaike knew that I was really the representative of the Moor community, while he was not.
And looking back now, what can have you to say on the performance of the Bandaranaike government from 60 to 65?
Well, they did some good service, there's not the least doubt. Excepting for the last stroke of bad luck, that they went and joined the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
We did not agree.
We being
14 of us members of Parliament, gave Mrs. Bandaranaike a memorial and begged of her not to take in the Reds. And the moment you take in the Reds, 14 of us signed and gave her a paper, a memorial, to say that we will resign from the assembly.
When was this? Can you remember the date?
9 months, or 8 or 9 months before the crossover.
Who were the 14, if I may ask?
As far as I remember, C.P. de Silva, I couldn't remember. I'll give you the names later.
In what spheres did you feel that real progress had been made?
Practically in all respects, I must say that we did, especially where minorities were concerned, although Mrs. Bandaranaike saw that the Tamils had progressed much better than the Moors, and because she was more helping the Moors more, the Tamils unfortunately felt misunderstood and thought that they were carrying on a vendetta against them, which I don't think was correct. Because the Tamils are just as good friends as the Sinhalese to me.
What sort of control did she have over her party, especially in the initial years?
Initial years she had a big pull.
I thought she was very immature and inexperienced.
No, but then the members respected her.
But
as the wife of the Bandaranaike and also as a lady, the first lady.
But did she tend to lean on particular individuals for a few years?
It must have. I'm not aware of. I suppose it was said so. But she had her own ways also, as far as I know.
On the other hand, you see an SLST government coming into power in July 1960 with a straight majority. But as the years pass, their position seems to get insecure, and that led her into this coalition. How did this come about?
No, if the 14 of us did not leave, there was no necessity.
Yes, but then why have a coalition? She wouldn't have...
She had to. I think she was misled. I'm sorry to use those words, but I think she was misled and badly advised. The result was this, the disaster.
You have no idea who led in this direction?
Well, now that I'm accepting a position,
I position,
I think I wouldn't mention names.
What about the actual timing of the crossover? All 14 acted together.
Yes. That was really an achievement, how we all,
yes,
who signed that paper. It's good. And Mrs. Bandanaka only lost by one vote.
Who engineered the timing? That seems to have been very, very well managed.
I think it was Mr. C.P. De Silva.
I was wondering why the people...
And I think it was more luck than maneuvering.
I was wondering whether people like Sarat Videsinghe and R.C. De Silva had a hand in persuading C.P. De Silva's group.
No, I don't think so.
And it was also said that Mr. J.R.
Sarat, of course, had a big hand going up to this guy. He's a clever man, too. I must take my hat off, but I wouldn't take my fez off.
J.R. Jayawardene, wasn't he also behind the scenes?
Must have been in a way, mm-hmm, but he's the big brain man of today, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. The elections themselves in 65, what do you think contributed to the SLSP defeat? What were the major factors?
Well, I never thought about it, to be frank. But where we Moors were concerned, the moment I got out, they had their own say. And I think we had a big say in the bringing of the new UNP government. Mm-hmm.
Then it would be correct to say that in 56, the Moorish community tended to favor the SLFP, I think. There was some verb
yes,
at UNP.
Yes, yes.
But in 65, they had swung over more to the...
Yes, to the right. Or to democracy.
That's then... do you think this thing was partly due to their opposition to Marxism?
That is so. Perfectly correct.
Now, on the other hand, take the more recent Perumbulla election. I believe that's a small Moorish community in Perumbulla.
Not Perumbulla.
Maybe Adilabad. One of the two.
Are you referring to...
No, not the...
Eastern Prime?
Not the Kalmaya. Last year.
Well, I didn't pay much attention to Perumbulla.
And I was told it was a very small group, about 400, and it was evenly divided.
Hmm.
Like some voted for the SLSP and some for the
UNP.
I think. What about Kalmunai? What have you to say on the elections there?
There, I think our government made a little error in giving in to the Tamil federal party.
Giving
in to the federal party and putting out the federal party candidate, which meant that if Mashur Maulana was returned, the Moors of that area would have to give in to federalism. That was the main object with which the Moors voted there, not to be sort of defeated by the Tamils.
So you think they should have had an independent candidate?
If they had only a government candidate, I think they would have won. Instead of a federal party government.
You mean a UNP candidate?
No, a government candidate. Government of today put up a government candidate. Rather than a federal party candidate, they would have won.
So you think your community's vote tended to go to which member? Not to the federal party member?
No.
To whom? To SLSP or the...
Yes, it went against the federal party member.
What about the Islamic Socialist Front's role? Didn't they?
No, it was really a personal victory for Ahmed, being a Moor, not the ISF as such. But he didn't try to make out that it was his victory.
Are the Moors in a majority there?
Well, I couldn't say just now, because you see there are a number of parties now. The III, the ISF, and number of them, YMMA and YMMA Conference, Muslim League, Moors Association. In the old days we had only Moors Association and the Al-Salam Moors Association and the Muslim League. But today there are numerous mushroom sections and who want to become leaders now. No, one is never a leader until he's shown his merit by service.
Turning to a completely different sphere, I was wondering whether the FNLP governments of 56 to 65 during that period one saw a certain amount of demoralization and deterioration in the public service.
Well, it was, I think the government at that time made a little error by giving that 1750 to the government service. While those, that was a small number, while the majority of the people outside, like you and I, we got nothing. See? Although the price of food and so on went up, clothing went up. And we were very badly in need of food and clothing.
Did you feel that the government was too prone to giving to the trade union?
Yes, yes, that is so.
And I asked that question because I was concerned about the discipline. I was wondering whether with the Ake and your mentality, discipline in the service went down.
Oh, very badly, very badly. The man who said, in one instance I remember, it was reported to me, a man said that in his gentleman who was seated in the train, he might have been a little drunk, otherwise he wouldn't have done this. He took his knife, opened it and said, cut the seat and said, Ape Andre. He's all ours. That thing has got into his brain, you see, into the people's brain. It was ours and therefore we can do anything. Well, that wouldn't be democracy.
In fact, I was wondering whether, for instance, there were instances where even peons could go over the heads of their superiors and get the ear of a minister or a junior minister, and therefore get their own way in certain things and undermine.
Yes. Yes. Sad. That was sadly the case. Very unfortunate.
On the other hand, what about the Tamils in the service? Did you feel that they felt they were being hard done by and tended not to pull their weight?
Well, might have been that, but anyway, I think they had they always held the upper hand as educated class. The most educated class of the Tamils. And even up to date, they are there.
But on the other hand, taking the UNP period, 48 to 56, don't you think that they tended to be very, very flashy and upper class and...
Who, they mean?
The UNP leadership, you know, top rung. And tended to rely on what one can call Tammany Hall politics, bribing people using the Lake House press and so on and so forth to get there, to achieve their objectives.
Might have been. But where bribery and corruption is concerned, I'm very far. And I hate it. That's not even the last resort, if one should bow down to that. I'd rather give up my feet than do that sort of business. Thank God I'm not in there. I'm not in any party today.
And what about the members who have come up, members of parliament who have come up in recent years, 56, 60, 65, do you think they are background and training and attitude is different to that of the previous era?
Very much. A great difference. Very great respect. I mean, in all respects, especially culture.
But don't they represent a culture of their own?
I suppose for the time being.
Did you feel that they are...
There's more talk than doing.
Do you think that they represent the mass of the people, or do they tend to push for their own individual advantage?
Not for the people.
So despite all this platform speaking, they are...
The only... Those are all lofty words. But in doing, I think that they do very little. My bitter experience.
To what extent are these new type of MPs bilingual? Can they speak in English?
Some of them are good, but yeah, they are in the career and so Prime Minister. But most of them, bilingually they are. Not up to it, although the Tamil community only speak in Tamil. While there is a set of Sinhalese, as deputy speaker I found out. While there is a set of Sinhalese who speak only in Sinhalese. And luckily I understood all three languages.
Do you feel that some of these MPs who emphasize Sinhala only are people who know only a little English, but insufficient English to speak confidently and therefore have a certain inferiority complex?
Yes, that is so. That's correct.
Are you raising this point because there's a recent chap who wrote the book, The Emerging Elite, tries to argue that this new group who have emerged in recent years represent both sections because they are bilingual.
Yeah.
And I have serious doubts whether they are competent in both languages.
In either of the languages?
Well, certainly in English I have doubts.
At times they are very unparliamentary, they use unparliamentary language. And in Sinhalese, well, even as a deputy speaker, I could not call him up to the... call him to order.
One final fear, Sir Rasik, the civil service, this is entirely different.
Yeah.
Can you make your comments on the British civil service? Civil service in the pre-1948 era.
Well, a British civil service, now I have no experience except in those who are here, especially from 1936 to 1947.
Mm-hmm.
But we are outside the Central Nine.
Yes, so
it didn't worry me at all.
In that period, what would you say was the emphasis and the orientation of
the standard? The standard was good. The standard was really good. And although we said, well, we had our British masters, but still there was honesty and service. Because if they did not do so, there was nobody to help them to pull them out of the mire if they got into the mud.
Do you feel that there was a sense of responsibility and a willingness to take responsibility?
Yes. At that time it was so.
Impartiality?
They were impartial. They were impartial.
And to what extent did they know the country and the problems of the people?
Well, those three people who were in Parliament were well read, and they travelled about and saw the people, although they hadn't much time, enough time.
Was there any friction between these three policemen and the ministers and the State Council?
Yes, there were many squabbles, but eventually they, you know, as Britishers, they can meet an argument. And if they failed, they gave in sort of thing.
Did you feel that in your period, the Board of Ministers was coming to have more and more power and to get more and more...
That is true. It's true.
So the offices of state were being more accommodated?
More, yes. They were accommodated.
On what sort of thing was there friction?
Well, I was not in the cabinet, but I felt that when it came to something, you know, some of these ministers spoke rather disparagingly of the Britisher, then they had to stand out, as you and I would stand out to our community. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering whether any of the officers of state were rather sticky and arrogant and tended to stand on their dignity.
Yeah, there were times like that also. They had to. And they had to keep up their position.
From the individuals you met personally in the civil service, were there any who struck you as standout men?
Yes. Now, Denham was a real good man for the progress of Lanka. Then there was Caldicott. He too was very fine. Moore, he was another standout man who rose from the lower rung of the ladder and who knew much more about Ceylon and her people. Yes, but there were quite half a dozen that I knew who were extremely good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how would you appraise people like Wedderburn and Drayton and Collins?
Collins was a regular. But Wedderburn was rather, I thought he was rather weak.
Did he tend to be, to be discursive, you know, to speak around the subject and not on the point? And
well, that would have shown him to be very clever.
Huxham, did you have much to do with him?
As finance minister, he was excellent.
You felt he was sympathetic? Nihil?
Who?
Nihil.
Well, he was the law officer. Mm. And he was always trying to get on with the people.
Late old man?
Oh, he was a wonderful man. He was a real soldier type. And he used his power in the best interest of London.
I was wondering whether in this time you got, even you know, before 48, you got a certain amount of conflict between the Bandaranaike and D.S. and others. Hmm. Was there conflict?
Yes, otherwise Bandaranaike would not have left the UN.
You felt he had been badly treated?
I think so.
He was being edged out.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a story going around that some of his local administration programs were being undermined by the others. They started the rural community centers in another ministry.
Yes, yes. The home ministry.
Yes, to counteract his influence.
Yes, that was so. He was very hurt. He was a brainy man. That was not the least of it. And when he was treated like that, he didn't.
What about the civil service in the 50s and 60s and until today? Has it changed in its attitudes, in its...
It has changed in its name and it has changed in its attitude also, I think.
In what way?
The type, you see. A cultured people.
For the good or for the worse, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it is for the worse. Mm-hmm. Sadly.
But don't you think they are more in touch with the people, more closely identified with the people?
Some are.
Mm-hmm. What about impartiality? Has that deteriorated?
I think so.
Responsibility, willingness to take on tasks and...
That's one of our failures, isn't it?
I was wondering whether the political framework has contributed to that.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Party system. Mm-hmm. Personally, I feel party system is a curse to Mother Lanka, to the country.
And for instance, the individual MPs having so much power and able to come to the minister and get things done means that the officer is trying to
override their Yes, even the correct thing can be done by an honest man. And fortunately, to my knowledge, there have been many cases that they, thanks to the language position, they retired on the language issue. They had that loophole to get through, you see.
On the other hand, there are still some officers who take a strong stand and are willing to stand up to the politician.
Yes, very few and far between.
End of interview.